latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
I ain't talking just to tease people like you that don't grow on trees. Look at you, that's what it's gonna be. Have everything I need around my sober Christmas tree. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
There you go. James Brown. Andy Serling standing by from the New York Racing Association. Good morning.
You're kind of breaking up.
Say again?
You're kind of breaking up.
Oh, yeah? That might be phone issue then, because I hear you good.
Okay. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Excited coming down tomorrow.
Wow. Should I alert the media?
Say again?
I said, should I alert the media?
We are the media.
We? I'm not.
That's true. That's true. We've had this discussion before. You don't want to consider, you know, that aspect. I guess the job is... What do you call it? What? It's not turf publicist. It doesn't qualify under that, I guess.
Idiot.
By the way, more importantly, speaking of turf publicity, Naja Thompson joined us today, Andy, and got a chance to congratulate him on the job with the New York Thoroughbred Breeders.
Sort of embarrassing. You've never had Naj on before.
Yes, I guess it is.
Who's going to be the technician for my podcast now?
Ooh,
I don't know what I'm going to do without Naj. On a slightly more serious note, I'm extremely happy for Naj and for New York Breeders as well. He's great. I mean, listen, personally, he's one of my favorite people. And I feel very fortunate, you know, when you work in racing, you meet people like Naja, it makes a lot of things worthwhile. And it's a great hire for them. He is committed, loves the game. He is a great asset to racing. And, you know, as time progresses and he's more and more involved, it's really going to be good for everybody. And I couldn't be happier for him and for them. And, I look forward to seeing him more, you know, in Saratoga. And I think it's something that all New York Breeders will come very quickly to be happy that Naj is working there. Because he's really, truly one of the good guys. And, he's committed to the game. And, as he grows in the position, I think it's just going to be a great situation for everybody. I'm very, very happy for him.
You know, he's one of those people that you see that is always upbeat. And it's funny because Kendrick Carmouche was part of our topic today too. I talked with Tony Black, and Kendrick always upbeat and smiling. And it just occurs to me, Naj, whenever you see Naj, he's always got a big smile on his face, and tell he loves being at the races.
Yeah, I mean, he's somebody that in racing. There are a lot of personalities in racing, and many don't always get along with the others. It's one of the things I like about the business. It's filled with a lot of big personalities. And in that situation, Naja is a constant where he's one of those people that you just can't find anybody that doesn't have a good thing to say about him. And that's been true in his entire time in Naira. I mean, I remember the first day he started working in marketing, and that time my, I would say my office, but that time I was still in the cubicle. I would have stayed in the cubicle. I just want to be clear on that. It was Dave O'Rourke that made me get an office many years ago. He somehow seemed to think I was more important than I thought I was. You know, Naj is starting the marketing department. I mean, we were sort of instant friends, and I'm thrilled for him, and I'm thrilled for them. So I think it's one of those situations where it's a good thing for everybody.
It's funny because, of course, Jeff Canizzo came into the NYRA fold to take on a very important job, the ombudsman assignment, you know, to interface with Albany, which opened up the door, you know, for this. So, different people putting on, you know, different responsibilities. And I also, Andy, on this topic, I also announced the NYFA board election results, too, with
Joe Applebaum. Yeah, I'm very happy to see that Joe got another. I don't know if I'm happy for Joe, but I'm happy in general. I kid, you know. Joe's a great asset to racing. It's unusual to get somebody, you know, who's got obviously a broad background in racing like Joe does, from, you know, from ownership to betting, and you know, has accomplished a lot in a short period of time, especially as far as horseman's comp has been concerned. And he really works tirelessly at it. And, you know, we're very lucky in racing to have some of the people that we have. And I think about some of the people we have in you know, important positions in New York racing, with Joe and Dave O'Rourke running NYRA. And it makes you feel optimistic about the future of New York racing. And, we're far from perfect, and racing will always be an extremely imperfect business. But there are some very, very good people. And to have Naja in that role, I think it's just enhances that. And you're right, and Jeff did an amazing job there. I remember when Jeff got the job, and I feel like he was working at the Racing Form at the time. I think that's how I knew him. I don't know if he went directly from there to New York Breeders, but he's done a fabulous job over the years. He really has, and, you know, we've such a good job that he's going to be working with us, right? So, I think it's great. It's a good transition from Jeff to Naja, so I wish them all the best.
Now, the season transitioned a little bit. Tomorrow, Andy, the winter starts officially, at least from a statistical standpoint, at Aqueduct, and we finished a very strong Aqueduct fall season.
We did, and I mean, as we said before the meet started, it was a meet that, if the weather cooperated, we were going to have a very strong meet, as we did last year. And I think it did, for the most part. I mean, obviously, unfortunately, and we'll talk about that, the weather, you know, was lousy on Saturday. But, you know, there was only one other sort of two-day period of rain that really screwed things up. But for the most part, terrific turf racing, terrific dirt racing, big fields. I mean, many days where it seemed like field size was hovering around 9 horses a race, mostly 10 race cards. Looking at these cards over the for Thursday and Friday, I think they have, in the body of the races, I want to say in 9 races, they have 89 and 91 starters. So you're talking about roughly 10 starters in the body. That doesn't even include also eligibles or MTOs. It feels like there should be no issue having the two turf races go off. And there's 3 on Friday, 2 tomorrow. So, yeah, I mean, everybody has cooperated. The purses, as we had advertised, have been excellent, and people have responded. So the racing has been great. Very hard, you know. It's very, very interesting. These cards Thursday and Friday are great. I mean, I'm, you know, still struggling to figure out picks for Friday, having spent a reasonable amount of time on it. So, it's been great racing, and it takes a lot. I mean, it's always going to take weather. You know, you're always going to be at the mercy of that. But obviously, the job the racing office has done, and Keith Dilshell has done a great job. Dilshell, and as racing secretary, I can't say enough good about Keith. It's a pleasure to work with him. He's done a fabulous job, and now his second year as the Aqueduct Racing Secretary. Horsemen obviously cooperating as well, and the owners. So, yeah, it's been great. Couldn't be happier with it. You know, it's unfortunate it rained for Cigar Mile Day, but that can happen, you know, and it's just the way it sort of goes.
Well, and let's touch on some of the performances, and you know, the Cigar Mile took a little bit of a hit style wise, and how things might have unfolded with you know, the wet track concerns and the scratch of Mind Control and Firenze Fire. So it reduced, and what's his name came out to the
Weaver.
Yes.
Right. I mean, that would have been a nine-horse field if that hadn't rained. There's nothing we can do about it. You know, it could rain any day of the year. It rains during the summer as well. It wasn't a particularly cold day. It was just, and the rain sort of stopped before the races started. It stopped by, I think, noonish or 1 o'clock, if not earlier than that. So, but it was a wet track. And listen, True Timber is not, and True Timber is now three starts in the Cigar Mile to win a second and a third. So it's not as though he didn't come in the race with credentials. And I mean, you could argue the horses that had the strong credentials in the race were Mind Control and particularly Firenze Fire, and they scratched. I know Performer was a big favorite, but his credentials, for whatever that's worth, weren't, you know, super strong. He had, you know, one maiden and three allowance races and the Discovery. I'm not trying to knock him, but he's not a horse that's had, unfortunately, because of the injuries earlier this year, he wasn't able to run throughout the year, and it was very unfortunate because he's a horse that a lot of us are fans of, including myself, and we're looking forward to running this year. So I get the frustration, no question about it. But he didn't have the resume some others did. I mean, you could argue that the True Timber, while he obviously, Performer, had succeeded almost every time he hit the racetrack, and True Timber hadn't, he had run some good races and big races. And, you know, how could you not be happy with Kendrick winning his first Grade One as it culminated, as it turned out, his first riding title at a meet at Naira? So those are all feel-good moments, you know. A lot of positives in there. I don't think that King Guillermo ran his best race, but it was a tough ask coming off a layoff. I had hoped he'd run better. He didn't, but he didn't run horrendously. And I think there's a hope that he could have a good year going forward. And hopefully Performer will get a chance, you know, whether on a dry track or just going forward, to see what he can do. It was only a second race. You know, I was sorry to see some of the comments that Shug made. But on the other hand, Shumagay has been an incredible trainer and had a great career in racing. And nobody should be remembered by their worst moment. I don't like reading it's a black eye for Naira. Moving the race has been really beneficial, I think, to Horsemen and the race over the years. I mean, it's one of the moves that, you know, Martin made that I think was great. Moving that and the Remsen Demoiselle a week has proven over time to have gotten better fields. And maybe this year notwithstanding, but overall, there have been strong fields for those races. And last year was certainly the case. And Maximum Security won it last year. So, you know, that's unfortunate. But, you know, listen, that's, I'm sure, in frustration, we've all said things that, in retrospect, we probably regret.
Well, it's a nice win. You mentioned the element involved for Kendrick, and we talked to him on Monday. Also had Jack Sisterson on, and you know, we really kind of lauded what Calumet has brought to the table. You know, Brad Kelly loves to run in not just in big spots. He seems to enjoy, he runs everywhere. It doesn't matter if there's a number by the race or not. So it's nice to see them get rewarded. You know, I thought it was a result that was easy to get behind.
Yeah, I mean, the Remsen, we saw terrific performances by the top two. The New York Bred that won, Brooklyn Strong, was terrific. I mean, he was just relentless. You know, ten for ten. Right. I think he ran terrific. I mean, you know, you have to, it's obviously frustrating if you're the connections of 10 for 10 that he lost. But if you take a broader view, he ran great. You know, he's a really, really good and promising 2-year-old. I mean, they got a 93 buyer, which is what one or two points below the juvenile got, and that was taking advantage of a fast pace. And so at track and such, but I think that the 10 for 10 ran terrific. And, you know, if you take Brooklyn Strong of the race, he'll be talking about him as a major Derby Triple Crown contender. And I think they should be talking about him as one. But I think they should also talk about Brooklyn Strong. I mean, both are going to have to show that they can run that kind of race on a dry track. But they ran. I mean, they really ran. They just completely separated themselves from the field. I thought that was an excellent race and just two outstanding performances. And cool for the New York Breds, who won two stakes that day, with Sharp Star winning as well.
Right.
you know, the Demoiselle was disappointing. Amalathot ran impressively in that she won despite sort of nothing going right for the first mile of a 9-furlong race. And I think she deserved a lot of credit for winning that race, given that she just, you know, wasn't happy inside. Probably being inside wasn't the best place to be. There's nothing to do through the rail. And I think one of the reasons the second horse was forwardly placed is Joelle sort of kept her in early and ended up getting it more forward. But it wasn't a fast race. Obviously, a very slow race. Got 76 Meyer. It was 1¾ seconds or something slower than the boys. And in a year where the fillies have been so much better and more impressive than the boys as far as two-year-olds, this was a rare day where the boys actually ran much faster than the girls did. But, you know, Malathot is 3-for-3. She's run well. She's going to have to get faster because this is not a year to be a slow two-year-old filly and get it done. Because there are some really, really good ones out there. But, yeah, you can't knock how she, you know, that she overcame adversity. I think that's what you always want to see, especially for two-year-olds. I mean, if you're Todd Fletcher, winning the Demoiselle isn't going to make or break her career. But if you're Todd, you look at it and think, well, she still won a race where sort of nothing went right for her. That's never a bad thing, especially with a young horse trying to develop going forward.
What's your read on the mile in the eighth success at this time of year? Because you know there's been this dialogue
It means something when the horse goes on and wins, and it means nothing when they go on and run like crap. I don't know, did it help Lake Avenue out? who won the Remsen last year? Do you remember?
Last year's Remsen, top of my head, it wasn't, Independence Hall came later.
Right, yeah, was it somebody, he didn't run the Remsen, right? He won
no.
the Bachelor, didn't come back in the Remsen.
No, he waited until the first of the year, the Withers or whatever the snake was.
I don't know, I'm going to look up who won it.
Shotsky for Jerry O'Dwyer.
There you go. He must have gotten hurt, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Camera adjusting with that answer a little slowly.
He's
a good horse. I mean, you know, horses get hurt and get issues, so that keeps them out. So I'm not. But what I'm saying is, I always like the Remsen, and obviously, it's if you have a horse and he wins a seventh, let's take the horse who ran the fastest Fire, what we'll get to, Highly Motivated, who won 6½ furlongs and ran a big Fire. Well, that's all good and fine, but if you want to win the Derby, winning a 6½-furlong race isn't going to give you a lot of confidence no matter how quickly you run. And I'm not saying that. I'm just using it as an example.
Sure.
If you win the Remsen with a 93 Buyer at a mile and eight, there's a lot of reason to, you know, be encouraged. You may have a mile and a quarter horse, but should I make more of that race than a mile and a 16th in the Breeders' Cup? No. And I'm firmly in the camp, and studies have proven this, that one turn, two turns is a bunch of hooey for the most part. One turn is going to help horses' closers because the pace is rate to be quicker, and two turns is going to help speeds, conversely, because the pace is rate to be slower. But there's not, you know, the notion that there's a horses improve from one turn to two turn. Well, most of the time, I think where it would come from is, other than Aqueduct, Belmont, Arlington, and Churchill, every race beyond 7 furlongs on tracks around now is around two turns. So mile races would be a two-turn race. I think it was more of a euphemism for routes. You know, I think that's where it came from, and I think, unfortunately, it's been misused as the thinking that somehow two turns is the reason the horse does well as it gets more distance. No, it's a distance thing.
I'm also gonna read off a few others since we looked up for Shotsky. How about these winners of the Remsen in the last 10 years? Catholic Boy, Motown, Mohamen.
Steve, slow down because I literally can't hear you. I don't know if your mouth may be too close to your mic.
No, my mouth's not too close to the mic. The mic's where it always is.
So quickly, I will not understand. I heard the first one. I forget who it was, but I heard it.
Catholic Boy.
Okay.
Motown.
Well, Motown was a disaster until he got the turf, to be fair.
Well, either way, he went on to a successful career.
Well, he won the turf. He was a poor dirt horse.
Mohamen.
he turned out to be a flash in the pan. Ronald Mohaman was a super two-year-old who never got any better. That was Ronald Mohaman. And as other horses caught up and got better, he was just a tremendous two-year-old who just didn't get better. And yeah, he won the Fountain of Youth, and I think the Holy Bull, but you know, once the real running was done, he just wasn't good enough.
Leave the Light On.
Well, he caught a gold rail. The horse that actually ran the good race in there was Frosted, who finished second or third with a wide trip against the gold rail, and Frosted went on to a pretty darn good career.
Yes. Yes.
Glenwood, but also he ran well in Triple Crown races. He's the horse that made Poor American Pharoah after run a quarter of under 24 and change at some point during his illustrious career, and led to that nasty defeat he took because of that mean Frosted. Well, I mean, I'll give you one, too. He got hurt, but Cairo Prince could have been a really good horse. He's turning out to be a good sire, and he beat Honor Code. I mean, that was a very oddly run Remsen. But you're right. I mean, the Remsen's had some really good horses in it.
No, Honor Code won that race.
Oh, Honor Code won? He beat? I couldn't remember who won.
Honor Code did win. He was very good. Overanalyze.
Okay.
Well, we kind of fishtail a little bit now. Oh, Prado Again.
Yes, he was not a good horse.
To Honor and Serve.
Well, he was a really good horse. He was a bit of a fraud that he wouldn't overcome any kind of adversity, but he's one of the most talented horses of that kind I've ever seen. He did win the Woodward. Should have been disqualified, but he won it.
Wow, here's a horse that had looked like he had such potential, and Bruce was so excited. Everybody was excited. Buddy Saint.
Not me, but everybody not named Andy Serling.
Buddy Saint.
You know where he ran his next race? Do you remember his next race? I believe that he was favored in the Fountain of Youth, won by Heston Barea, and Nick ran second, maybe with Icebox. Was that Icebox this year?
That sounds right, actually.
Icebox came back and won the Florida Derby, and Heston Barea, of course, would have won the Triple Crown if he didn't get hurt.
But Buddy Saint got hurt, I think, out of that Fountain of Youth, right?
Yeah, that was it. Did he come back later and just couldn't?
I don't think so. That was too.
Yeah,
bad.
No, that was a big win for Bruce. Hey, my first Remsen, I saw Believe It beat Aligar. I was there.
Nice. Well, you go back to that era. I'll give you. You know what? It's funny you say that. One of my lost Derby hopeful types. I fell in love with Yonder. I think I was there that day when Yonder won his Remsen. And
Yonder was that Scotty?
No, it was Woody. No, it was Woody. Woody Stevens.
Woody. Well, I couldn't remember. Was Claiborne and Hagen Perry, or was that William
Claiborne?
Perry?
No, Claiborne.
It was Claiborne? Okay, I wasn't sure. Oh, I remember Yonder. Sure.
You're going to love this, and I can't remember if it was Remsen Day or if it was the next spring. Obviously it wasn't Remsen Day, but it was at Belmont during a big Saturday. You could there were vendors, you know, down past the barber shop, and there was a guy that had hats, and they were blank, and then he would embroider the name of a horse over, you know, the silhouette.
You still have your Yonder hat.
I still have the Yonder hat, yeah. Yes. And
my favorite
hat
is my Swing for the Fences hat.
Oh, my gosh.
I love it.
Swing for the Fences. Awesome. That's a good one.
I never recovered from getting scratched out of Forgo that day. He was turning back from the Whitney. I cherish my Swing for the Fences hat. That was long before I knew Seth. Long before I knew him. I just always thought that. I don't know why. That's funny. No, I do not remember that, but I believe you. No, the Remsen's a great race. Listen, there have been plenty of really good horses. I understand why people use the mile eight race. I just, you know, I'm not overly concerned with a horse getting a mile and eight. I'll tell you, I know that Todd Swartz ran poorly in the Rems at a distant third, but, you know, I wouldn't give up on that horse right away just because he didn't run well in the slop. He's a better horse than that. And I think the horse that he beat is the greatest honor of Shug's. They have that photo finish when in the maiden race. So I think he could be okay. And I think he's Quillen Farm too, much like 10 for 10 is. So there's a couple of promising horses going towards next season. You know. The Colts have a long way to go. But then again, the 2-year-old fillies last year looked awful, and it turned out to be a good year for the 3-year-old fillies. So things can change, and they will change.
That's true. Yeah, it was a very fun day of racing.
I think it was a good way to end. It's been a terrific meet, and I don't think that we're seeing in these Thursday and Friday cards any letdowns so far. And it's really encouraging. It's been fun. It's been challenging, but it's fun and good racing. And people have responded. The handle numbers have been terrific, and you can't ask for anything more. Did you read Jim Ovenhill's article about the track at Keeneland yesterday?
No, not yet.
You should, not yet. That's your stock answer, not yet. You should. I think it's a very interesting article. I retweeted it for those that are interested. Because he talks to a lot of the right people, you know. He talks to Paul Matisse, talks to Marshall Graham, you know, he talks to Craig Mikowski, and he gets a lot of good opinions. I don't agree with his assessments at the end. I thought there was an unfortunate comment by the Breeders' Cup when they said the fast times are reflective of the best horses in the world competing. Well, were they reflective the prior year when they ran that slow track at Santa Anita and the track times were really slow? You know, come on. Horse players are smart people. Don't ever talk down to horse players and act as though they don't know the story. I don't think any sane person would suggest that there was some sort of insidious cabal trying to make these tracks faster. It happened for whatever reason. I think it was unfortunate because, you know, these track records give people the wrong impression. You know, track records are created by racetracks, not by horses for the most part. You know, if you go through the history of track records, you'll see more track records created by tracks as opposed to the horses themselves. Obviously, there are exceptions like Dr. Fager, but, you know, but of course the Breeders' Cup is as concerned and committed to the safety of horses as we all are in this industry, and as we all should be. But let's not deny that track was unusually fast on Breeders' Cup weekend. Whatever the reasons for it, I don't know. I don't really care. Listen, we shouldn't deny that we had a gold rail on Belmont Stakes weekend 2019 at Belmont. It happened. I don't think there was any attempt by the track maintenance crew to make that happen. Sometimes things happen. But let's not deny that it was the case. It wasn't because the best horses in the world were running. It was because the track was unusually fast. When one of the track records is set by a 2-year-old making his third career start, that ends up getting a 96 buyer, I think that puts the perspective on how quick the track was. But I thought that I thought Jim's article was really interesting and well worth a read. For nothing else, it's got some good perspective, some smart people in racing that aren't spinning.
Well, and I'm going to retweet your retweet of the
paper. Then you can read it. And then you can read the article.
That'd be fine.
You can watch The Exorcist.
You're not going to get me
a hole in your movie watching life.
I won't argue, but I'm squeamish. I'm not. It's not my milieu.
I'm watching it this morning before you eventually called me, and I hate car movies. I mean, and there are.
I know you do. I know.
What's that?
I know you. I know you don't like horror genre.
I think it's a much more interesting movie. I think it's about a lot of other things besides that. Pretty amazing that William Friedkin made The French Connection, Sorcerer, which is the remake of Wages of Fear, which I'm sure you've seen.
Love.
Wages of Fear is a tremendous movie. Yves Montand is a great, great movie.
It's one of the best films that people probably have not seen. My father took me to a revival house to see it. Yeah. It's my father's favorite film.
Incredible. You know, I'll tell you, I saw it, the first time I saw it was when Film Forum showed it, going way, way back, and I ran to Stanley Tucci when I saw it. Actually, he was walking to Film Forum as I was walking down Houston Street after leaving, and he was going to the next show.
This is the point. You know, this is the point in our get-togethers where you would normally say to me, you know, something about name dropping.
Okay, I used to know. You're right. No, you're right. That's fair.
No, I'm kidding.
Way back.
We're going to get tight on time, and I do want you to riff on a horse.
Okay.
Congaree.
Oh, he was such a... I mean, David Aragona put up his lifetime PPs on Twitter, and for anybody who should follow David anyway, check him out. It's quite a reminder of what an unbelievable horse he was, and I think it's important for people to look at horses like that so they can get an idea of what a really great horse looked like. He had an incredible career. I think he ran 120 buyers in two straight cigar miles. I think he ran 116 in the Carter, but he also ran big figures going along. He lost that tough race to Milwaukee Brew, and I think the Hollywood Gold Cup or the Santa Anita Gold, the Santa Handicap, one of those races. I mean, he could win from seven, you know, grade ones from seven furlongs. He didn't, I don't think he ever won one in a mile and a quarter, but he ran winning races, even in defeat. You know, even in that Breeders' Cup Classic where he finished fourth, right? But he dueled with Medaglia d'Oro, and Medaglia d'Oro ran an incredible race, finishing second with Pleasantly Perfect winning and the great Dynevor running third. But he ran a tremendous race finishing fourth that day. He ran a super race in the Derby when he finished third. You know, he's beaten a Zoff by Invisible Ink, but my God, he set a crazy pace that day, which set it up for Monarcos. He was, what a horse he was. I saw him, you know, race quite a few times because he won the Wood. I saw him the Cigar Miles, the Carter. I saw him lose the Jim Dandy. I think about the 1 year the Jim Dandy was a grade one. I needed Free for Love that day with Richie at 35-1.
Oh, my God.
He got beaten by Scorpion, who came back on the wire.
Yep.
I don't think ever ran a competitive race again as long as he was running. That's true. I'm still bitter about it, as you can see. But no, Congaree was, what a horse he was. I mean, I know that Bob has more celebrated horses than Congaree. I'm going to tell you, not too many of them were better than him. You take a lot of the ones that people remember Bob as having, and you run him against Congaree at his best at a flat mile, good luck to him.
I won't argue. I had John Adger yesterday from Stoner Side, and John talked about, you know, the origin story with him and, you know, breeding the mare to Arazi. And then, you know, they were in the process of selling off the assets to Sheikh Mo, but they, you know, they kept Congaree. He talked about the call that he got from the farm from Bobby Spalding saying, "Do you still have the mare?" And
Mary's
I said,
book.
"Yeah."
Is the mare Mary's book? Is that
yes. Yes. And Mary Sheba, Mary's
Mary
book
Sheba.
was the stallion.
Right.
And John said, "Well, yeah, sure." He goes, "Well, good. Hang on to her because this horse is well, one fast son of a bitch."
he was such a great horse, Scott. He was such a great horse. If you love good horses, you love Congaree. That's for sure. No, I was sorry to hear he passed, but he had a great life and an amazing career. And these are the kind of horses that make you love the game, you know?
Yep.
I mean, let's face it. It's it was never a horse, though he actually had a positive ROI in his career. He was 12 for 25. And I think if you bet $2 on him in every race, you got about $2.15 back. Not bad when you consider how short a price he was. But no, he was an amazing horse. Did you see that Chad Brown's announced newspaper record was retired?
I just myself just retweeted it, and what a special talent she was, and it's great that that after the frustration of the 3-year-old season, that Chad was able to kind of remarshal and refocus her and finish up strong.
Yeah, no, I still remember her debut. I put up a picture of her in the paddock from her debut. And how exciting that was. And gosh, she was as exciting a 2-year-old as you'll ever see. She was incredible. It was like a wind-up toy. It was amazing, yeah. So, and Chad said that she's going to be bred to Galileo, so that's cool, too. So, what, about 3 years? What? About 3.5 years we can look forward to her running. Always something to look forward to in racing. Isn't that the beauty of racing?
So much. Yes.
It is. It's great, yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward. I'm looking forward to coming down for the debut of our 2-year-old.
You know, you can see me this time because I'm not, stuck on the air. I'm in the studio between races from Prattle. What race are you losing tomorrow?
We're in the second.
You're in the second? Mm-hmm. That's very exciting. Well, if I don't see you, I'm not going to take it well. If you text me, I'll come to the paddock and meet you there.
How about that?
That's
what we're
going to
do. Excellent. All right, we're gonna take you up on that, and I appreciate you staying on to the close of the show.
Well, I appreciate you calling me half an hour late. I mean, so it works both ways. That way, I got to keep watching The Exorcist.
I was gonna say I didn't want to take away from a pivotal moment in The Exorcist.
Ellen Burstyn made so many great movies. Here's one that she's in that you've probably seen or should see is King of Marvin Gardens.
Oh, sure.
Great movie. Bruce Dern, Jack Nicholson, Karen Black.
Wasn't it, she must, when was
I think it's the Rapelson movie after Five Easy Pieces, right?
I'm going to have to go to IMDb for this.
There was a big article about Bob Rapelson Esquire this past year that he's still around. It's a great movie.
I was curious. When Exorcist was what, 74?
73. Yeah. It was between the Godfathers.
How about that? Because I'm just curious when she, in her, because when was Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore? It had to be close.
Oh, 70. 475. You realize many people would be surprised to realize that Alice in the Living Room was made by Martin Scorsese.
They might be. You're right. Boy, what a run she had in the early 70s. The Last Picture Show, King of Marvin Gardens, The Exorcist, Harry and Tonto, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. Wow.
Harry and Tonto is such a great movie.
It's a great picture.
You know, I'm not sure, but I think that Jodie Foster makes her big screen debut. She's in The Little Girl Down the Lane, but was that a TV movie? But I think that Alice Leary might be her big screen debut. It's one of her very early movies.
You know that she, I saw her referenced in the TV version of Addie Prey the other day, Jodie Foster.
Wow.
How about that? I gotta
go. That's the name of the book that Paper Moon is based on, right?
Correct. And there's a horse.
So it's 11:59.
Andy Serling, everybody, with a fabulous visit. Andy and Ed Martin and Tony Black and Sid Fernando and somebody else. I'll talk to you on Friday, everybody. Thanks.